Boys Lunch.
Here we go.
And we're back.
Boys Lunch. Hope everybody had it.
What are you looking up right now?
I'm just curious whether or not the McRib is still available at McDonald's. It's the greatest month of the year.
By the way, Paul's not trying to order a McRib. He just wants to know if he can't.
Just want to know if it's still available. It is not.
They already took it away.
So
with something so, that is just not very good, you kind of have to do releases like that.
Not available. Still available.
Because then people are like, wait a minute, I haven't had a McRib in 10 months. And then getting in like, well, that's why I don't spend $5 on it.
Now, they overcharge. It says here that the McRib is still available, but not after midnight. Every other sandwich available after midnight.
It's just tough for the workers after midnight. Well, slopping that barbecue sauce on that fake meat.
It's probably because it sits in a vat from like 8 a.m. until midnight. It's just like, they feel too bad. They just have to throw it away. I hope everybody's doing well. Follow us on Boys Lunch Podcast on Instagram. Talked to intern Casey. He thought that we believed he was incapable of making a Facebook page. That is not the case. We just thought he was too cool for one or too young for one.
Almost so, too capable of making
one. Yeah, that's what we meant, right? So Casey's going to go ahead and make us a Facebook page, I believe. More news on that to come.
We did have Kevin Cook send us an email, kind of a...
So is he caught up?
Well, I think he's kind of jumping around.
He's jumping around.
I don't think he liked us calling him out on his Facebook usage.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I think he was a little offended.
As always, just like Kevin Cook does, you can email us at boyslunch1 at gmail.com. So how was your...
Hold on. Burger King, remind me to come back to that.
Burger King.
What were you going to ask me, though? How was...
I was going to ask you, how was your Thanksgiving slash...
Well, whatever. Let's jump into Kevin Cook.
Kevin Cook, let's do it.
Was a little upset. He did look into Facebook, though, to see if there's any Boys Lunch pages. There are. He's like, since you threw me under the bus, but great to be on the show again. Thank you. Such an honor. I looked it up for you. There is someone that has a Facebook page called Boys Lunch. The page description, it's a food page. It's a chef. The page description has chronicle of a food obsession, but he used the wrong chronicle.
Ooh.
Yeah, chronicle like with an A-L at the end, like having a chronic disease, I guess. But maybe he's trying to do that.
It could be a play on words.
Yeah, I guess. As, instead of like the Chronicles of Narnia.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, which we were all thinking when
of
I said
course,
chronicle.
Of course, right?
But he did put in all caps. Come on, man. I think to that chef, so.
But I have no idea how I got on the topic of the McRib, and I asked you about Thanksgiving. That was like 2 weeks ago. We are in the final days here at this semester, and I am all over the place.
Yeah, why aren't you going? I had more to this email, okay?
Oh, my gosh. Kevin, the depth.
He said, basically, I think you guys can take him. We can go with Boys Lunch Podcast, unless Facebook leadership, Mark Z and company is what he says, takes us down. But he's saying Father Mike Schmitz has a Facebook, and he says there's three private discussion groups totaling over 81,000 followers.
Yikes.
So he said, strike while the iron's hot. People are wanting Catholic discussion boards. We are just like Father Mike.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So thank you, Kevin, for the encouragement.
But he's encouraging us to make a Boys Lunch podcast page, not try to take down the current Boys
Lunch. The Chronicle of a Food Obsession.
Right.
Which I think we could do that too.
Right. It's an option.
Yeah. So we are all over the place. Burger King.
What's going on?
Well, I saw you looking up. I think you have the McDonald's app, don't you?
Well, yes, I and
you're a rewards member of McDonald's.
I am not.
Of the Don.
Mary's going to kill me because I have this thing where the apps, once you haven't used them for a while, they no longer are there. So once she was like, hey, can you pick up like something? I was like, I don't have the app anymore. I'm sorry. And there's like deals there. She obviously won't use it. So I downloaded it again, but she hasn't asked since then. So of course it'll be gone by the time. But anyway, that's besides the point. Yes, we are a member of the McDonald's Gold Club.
Well, Burger King's coming out with, they have a royalty program.
No.
And on Friday, Saturday, I don't know if you saw, it was big news. They were selling the Whopper for 37 cents, its original price.
Get out of here. I didn't hear that.
Guess were our three locations participating in that in Bloomington Normal?
No.
No. They're not using the royalty program yet. It's just, I think, a little too tough for them or something, you know? It's really hard because all the business they're not getting, it's hard for them to keep up.
Man, I have seen a lot of restaurants that just aren't bothering with indoor dining anymore. Like fast food restaurants.
Yeah.
They just drive through. So I wonder if they've...
Yeah, they didn't even... Yeah, I was going to go get a 37-cent Whopper because I'm that person.
You would.
And they're like, nah, we don't do that at this location. What's online?
Honey, what do you want? Burger King? All right, I'm on my way.
Yeah. So, whatever. That's all I had.
Call me back to Burger King. Anything else going on in your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's been good. I love holidays. Big Christmas guy. We covered that last podcast. So, It's been nice at home. At school, it's been a different story. Everyone's a monster. No, it's been fine. It's the usual end of the semester stuff.
People are tired and stressed. Mental health is an issue right now. Everybody's struggling.
No, so yeah, it's been fine. I'm excited for a break.
You got your Christmas tree up?
I told you that. Yeah, I got both of them up.
Oh my gosh. How long has it been since we podcast?
Last week. Oh,
both of them.
Got both of my Christmas trees up. Got a lot of decorations up. Just feeling cozy. I'm just like slowly putting up more and more lights just around the house. Like Stella would just kind of walk around like, when did this go up? And where did you get these? They're $3 at Meijer. I'm sorry.
I had 10 minutes.
Yeah. We had a Pinewood Derby building this weekend. So for people like me, pretty much, they put together, there's two dads that live next to each other, my brother and another one. Mm-hmm. They open up the garages and had kids come. You can measure out the blocks of wood. For those of you that are not familiar with the Cub Scouts, they do something called Pinewood Derby. Why? I don't know. But it's a thing. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm just like wondering the origins. I never looked it up.
Interesting.
Because I feel like that is like one of the things of being a Boy Scout. Take a block of wood. Make it into a car and make it go fast.
They were STEM before it was cool.
They were STEM before it was cool.
Yeah.
You ever make one?
No. I was never a Boy Scout. And it shows. Am I right?
Watch him try to tie a knot, guys.
I can do a fishy knot.
Oh, sure. You're a fisher.
So how do you feel about your block of wood?
It was a little belittling just being there the whole time. I think a couple of dads are engineers. And a couple of them have done it a while and... I heard them explaining to their first grader about friction resistance on the rails as their first grader's just slurping down hot cocoa, not listening to a word they said. It was, very intimidating.
It's a big deal.
But also very helpful. Okay. I shouldn't say intimidating. It wasn't. But I was just like, wow, yeah, they're in it to win it.
You seem a little intimidated. You're worried.
No, I'm fine.
I mean, who are you competing against? Are you going to take on my brother-in-law, Chris? Or are they in a different division?
You think Chris knows how to carve a piece of wood?
Aw, you'd be surprised. I bet you he did.
Chris, I know you're not listening, but Andrea, if you are.
I bet you Chris willed it himself. Didn't even need any machinery.
I think Chris is going to have a manual handsaw. He's going to just cut a triangle. Like pretty much just have a one little wedge thing. Barely going to get the wheels on. Dad, take that, Chris.
Already talking smack. I'm excited to see. I hope they...
I should post a picture of the finished product.
Dude, that would be great.
As just like the episode picture,
whatever happens. This is the sole one to fall off the track.
Dude, they were telling me I got to polish the axles for like 6 days before the race. I'm like, I don't know how to polish. What do you mean polish?
You got to soak
these. Like take a drill and, I don't know, spin a bunch of sandpaper around the axles to make them slick. I don't know. I was very confused.
See, my understanding was you just like designed something cool and you stuck some wheels on it. This is not the case.
No, they're like talking about rail riding where you bend up one of the axles to reduce friction, the weight placement, how much like there's a lot that goes into this, man.
You know what?
This is for my kindergartner, by the way.
You submit a untouched block of wood with wheels on it
and I say, hey, this is art. You don't get it. Anyway, it's going to be exciting. It was pretty fun and they cut it for me. So that was nice. We went with the Phantom model.
The Phantom model.
Yeah, so it's going to turn out really good.
There are models.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I cannot wait to see this. I hope it is broadcast live on the ESPN.
They did have, like, they're having a dad competition, too, but I did not enter.
I'm sorry, there's a dad competition? So you could have submitted your own?
Which I think the actual thing is just the dad competition. So, like.
You're trying to tell me your kindergartner isn't in there with the saw and sand?
I think I was supposed to have him do one of the drills, and I should have. I don't know why I didn't let him just press the button.
Because you're making it all about you.
Jeez, yeah, I'm selfish. Get your life anyway, out. What else is going on, Paul? That was a lot about me and Pinewood Derby.
How much we got our tree this weekend. I know we're a little behind.
You guys are a real tree
people. We are real tree people.
That's so cool.
AB Hatchery looking for a sponsorship here in town. You know, it's not the classic experience that some people go through where they like go out and they walk in and they kind of saw it.
You don't need to do that,
I don't
though.
Need that. We go there. It's so simple. We go there, we're like, this is how we're looking, this tall, this wide. Guy shows.
So they already have them cut. They just have trees sitting there.
Guy, nice. Yeah, guy shows us it. He's like, this one? I'm like, nah, a little too wide. This one? We ask the girls. We're like, yep. Ties it to our hood of our van. We're on our way.
No way.
Yeah, man.
On the hood?
On
or
the
like
hood.
On the top?
On the top.
I was like, dude, that's cool.
It was that big and hung over the hood.
That's awesome. Good for you.
I know car terms.
That is cool, though. I like the real tree. We might do it some year.
Yeah, it's fun. They're quality trees. It's a little bit more expensive.
That's what I'm saying. We went to one. I'm like, wow, you're pretty proud of your trees. Charging an arm and a leg out of here.
Worth it, though.
Oh, yeah, the realness.
The realness. The sap that I'm still trying to get off my fingers 40 years
later. All right, sorry. We can get into the topic.
I think we just want to speak a little bit about maybe a concept that we've discussed previously in the past, and people have already turned it off because of this beautiful introduction. But the idea that we view people through the lens of utility, right? This kind of this postmodern world that views people by what they produce. Like, that's where your dignity comes from. That's where your worth comes from. That's who you are. It's very much summed up in exactly how useful you are. And even in our own friendships, like, it's not a, I think we talked about the idea that you're working towards a light goal together, a friendship of virtue, where you're building each other up, but it's more of like, in our relationships, it's like, well, you and I are friends as long as you remain useful to me. So someone that has been on my radar since I worked with Mark First, which is a local nonprofit here in town that supports individuals with developmental disabilities, was Jérôme Lejeune.
Did you look up the pronunciation?
I had to. It's nice. French. You know I'm not good.
Yeah.
Jérôme Lejeune, now venerable Jérôme Lejeune.
Can we just call him Jérôme the rest of the
we'll
time?
We'll call him Jérôme.
Yeah. But you got the gist. He knows how it's pronounced.
Venerable Professor Jérôme.
So he's a venerable Lejeune. Now.
Yes, which absolutely. Means... He is on his way to sainthood. He is, so it'll be beatified next, and then he will be canonized. So he has lived a virtuous life. That might be servant of God. I'm trying to think what is the first pass to venerable. Maybe that's the one. Lived a virtuous life.
Yeah, I think he's passed all the tests to say that he's like, didn't say anything bad, lived a good life.
So this is a professor, classically trained, both in philosophy, but also in the sciences. He's known as kind of like this, he's ultimately a geneticist. Okay, and it's kind of almost the father of modern genetics. Born just outside of Paris in 1926, he discovers in 1958 that individuals who have Down syndrome have an extra pair of chromosomes on the 21st chromosome. So it's called a trisomy 21. So essentially, there's an extra chromosome on the 21st pair. And this is a huge discovery that not only brings kind of this change in how developmental disabilities are approached, but the idea that these individuals who have Down syndrome are, it's not a result of something the parents did. It's an anomaly. It's a chromosome anomaly. It's not, I think there are all sorts of different like theories on what brought this about, but before 1958, they were still referred to as mongoloids because of their appearance. And that the families were, it was something that was hereditary, that was passed down either by disease or by something that was passed down from the parents. And it was, so these parents were kind of felt responsible for this, but also because it was misunderstood, these individuals were isolated and they were, the families themselves were kind of disowned in large parts because it seemed as if there was something wrong. And he just desired to return these individuals with Down syndrome to the status of personhood is really what his ultimate goal ended up being. And he does a phenomenal job and he demonstrates for us both the unity of faith and science, but also what it means to see a patient, to see the person before us as a person, independent of their utility or worth in the eyes of the greater society. What's tragic here is that Jérôme, after this discovery, because of the approach of modern science, they use this discovery as a means of, instead of trying to seek a cure or to develop greater care for individuals with developmental disabilities, they now use it, they began to use it as a screening process with the idea of killing or procuring abortions for those people who identified these markers in pregnancy, because as a means of trying to prevent them from being born because they were seen as less than. Jérôme loses much of his credibility within this and much of his research and funding in the 80s because of the French government at the time and its kind of prioritization of wanting to terminate these pregnancies using his own technology. And he's fighting against that because he sees the worth and value in the person and the dignity that is should bestowed upon them regardless of their disability.
So basically they were like, hey, thanks for discovering the root cause of this. We appreciate that. Well, now we're going to kind of manipulate and use what you have to benefit what we feel like is going to benefit society. So that's what kind of happens.
Right. And so this made me think back to another French author, Georges Bernanos. I'm doing my best, people. And that was The Diary of a Country Priest, which I had read a couple of sections of previously.
Yeah, just stop picking French people.
Man. And so it made me think of this paragraph that I want to read you now, if that's okay. Yeah. A little bit of a warning here does reference it makes a metaphorical reference to suicide, but it'll make sense in the context. Joy is in the gift of the church. Whatever joy is possible for this sad world to share. Whatever you did against the church has been done against joy. I'm not stopping you from calculating the precession of the equinoxes or the splitting of the atom. But what would it profit you even to create life itself when you have lost all sense of what life really is? Might as well blow your brains out among your test tubes. Manufacture life as much as you like, I say. It's the vision you give us of death that poisons the thoughts of poor devils, bit by bit, that gradually clouds and dulls their lasting happiness. You'll be able to keep it up as long as your industries and capital permit you to turn the world into a fairground of mechanical roundabouts, twirling madly in a perpetual din of brass and crackling fireworks. But just you wait. Wait for the first quarter of an hour's silence. Then the world will be heard of men, not the voice they rejected, which spoke so quietly, I am the way, the resurrection, and the life, but the voice from the depths, I am the door forever locked, the road which leads nowhere, the lie, the everlasting darkness. In this paragraph, again, written in the 1920s, this idea that humanity and its approach has begun to see with these eyes of utility that it is progress by whatever means, be damned the consequences. Again, what if we're losing at the center of this, this understanding of, yes, we have these gifts and sciences are good and we should seek to try to progress and make things better, right? Through technology, through science. But again, what we do with it, we're stopping and asking the question of ought we to, or why do we do it in the first place? And when we've lost kind of this underpinning philosophy that specifically Christian philosophy about personhood, it can be the cost to many people, especially the weak and the voiceless. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's such a cool, not cool, it's such a interesting insight, because I don't think people necessarily always think about this in your everyday life. I think it's hard for us to think about, I don't know, people that are going through different experiences than us. And for people within this whole community, I think as we didn't necessarily grow up with maybe people that had these needs within our own families. And it isn't until you meet people within these communities, or maybe you're exposed to it in some way, that your eyes are open to, like with anything, like a group that's marginalized or kicked out, in a group where their value and their dignity is taken away because of, like you said, their production and worth doesn't seem to live up to what society wants. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you're saying, yeah, it is like our, what we said before, our idea of progress and our misunderstood idea of progress. I really like kind of the connections that you've been making here. It's good.
Now, as an advocate of protecting children with Down syndrome, he of course is held up by the Catholic community, right? Pope Paul VI appoints him to the Pontifical Academy for the Sciences. He's the first chairperson of the Political Academy for Life, founded by JP2. This man was a great advocate, but what his lasting impact, I think, and this is what is important, is the patients in which he had and the parents of his patients, what they saw was a man who, when their son or daughter sat before him, that he wanted to spend the time with him to get to know and to advocate that this isn't a tragedy to be held. It's an opportunity for great love to take place, and that the great goodness that individuals with Down syndrome have within themselves and the love and good that they can share themselves, right? Anyone who's ever worked with anyone with an individual with developmental disability or someone with Down syndrome, right? You could see the joy and the love that takes place in there and the opportunity for love that it creates. And I think what we're missing is, so often do we see the poor individuals with disabilities and other marginalized people aren't given the time of day. They're not asked what they need. They're not treated with a respect that is needed or that Christ asks and demands. They're just, I don't know, we just get so caught up in what's next for me.
You don't fit in my box.
Right.
You don't fit in what I'm familiar with. It takes a little extra love, it's hard for us to give love, to be patient, to surrender some of our own things.
Where is this heading, or why do we keep coming back to this idea that we view the world from a utilitarian standpoint or production? Is that we've got these nations in the West, like the wealthiest and the most advanced in their science, and they've provided great gifts to humankind. But also at the same time, we have nations that are curing, quote unquote, Down syndrome. But curing Down syndrome in their eyes is and there's articles out there that said like such and such is cured. it's an elimination of any infant born that year with Down syndrome. Okay. Which means the loss of that life. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that that's just the danger. That's just the danger. The danger of having this approach with utility is now those who are vulnerable, right? Whether it be in the womb or now the discussion that's happening in states and nations about euthanasia or end of life issues, right? That your worth is somewhere in this middle ground of life in which you are most productive.
Yeah.
And in a society in which we've done all that we can to eliminate any suffering, any inconvenience. And that's just like, again, I'm not trying to dismiss technology. Like, I am very happy that my windows roll up without having to be cranked.
Well, okay? Even for people with Down syndrome, that technology helped us understand how to actually care for these people. Absolutely. And see them as people and give them the opportunities to live a fulfilling life where they're able to actually find the support they need. So I think our technology, what Jerome was trying to do, was using technology to aid people, not to use it as a technique for a certain group of people to say, okay, now we can make society better. I think that's the danger, is the utilitarian attitude. We're seeing the extreme case. I think that's what you're bringing up.
Yeah.
In something like Iceland, when they're saying, okay, we don't want this type of person within our society because it's just going to be a drain and too much work. Mm. Or like you're saying, I've had kids, I'll kind of hear them be like, oh, if I ever get old and start suffering, like, just take me out. Like this outlook on life, that there is no value in suffering, that there's no value in being old and like being able to share your wisdom in a different way and relate to people in a different way. I think utilitarianism in the extreme, we're seeing it happen with in maybe these life issues, mm-hmm. that certain, like, we're placing value on certain people's life based on who they are and what they do and what they can do. Mm-hmm. I think that's dangerous. But we also have the attitude in our life and our relationships where my friends are only useful to me if they're bringing me something. Mm-hmm. And if not, if I don't have our common interests anymore, I'm going to toss you aside. Or maybe it's within my family, my marriage, like, when I no longer necessarily like just spending time with you, we don't have a common goal that we're working towards, and I'm not, it's just about my self-interest, I can leave this marriage. Like, I think utilitarianism is, John Paul said, it was like the philosophy that's really ruining a lot of our loving community and like hopeful community. Because it's like, you're only looking at things and what can maximize pleasure and minimize pain. And that's not what the gospel is.
Right.
That's the exact opposite of what the gospel really is. I don't know. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think the gospel calls us to go to the fringes, to go to those who are ostracized, to go to those people who are in real, genuine need. And maybe it's the frustration is that we here, and myself included, have these feelings where, like, anytime there's the slightest inconvenience, it is such a frustration. And then there's the tendency to whine about it. We hear a ton of whining about this or that group of people. People that aren't us, people we don't mm-hmm. understand, people, I don't know. I just, especially with the poor, right? We have a population that wants to give from a distance. It doesn't want to go and actually meet these people mm-hmm. and want to know where they actually are.
There's a breakthrough when you actually encounter a person.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's the biggest thing of like a Living the Faith program like we do. If you actually go and meet someone that needs help and like develop a relationship, it you get so much more out of it because you're developing a relationship and it's filling you up while you're filling them up. It's a mutual kind of yeah. loving thing. I think when my world has been kind of open up, when I finally encountered people that had autism and I was able to experience them for the first time and understand the reality they're going through, but also just so much that I can learn from them and the way that they view life and the way they live life. I think when we don't encounter, yeah, it's easy to stay from a distance and to make these big judgmental calls about entire groups of people or just like cast off entire groups of people until you actually encounter. I think that's a lot of people that struggle with like racism and stereotypes. Mm-hmm. It's because they don't get out of their bubble and meet other people from other cultures mm-hmm. or other religions because they've never had that encounter. I think we experience that a lot here because there's not a lot of diversity within our town.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of our geography and where we are. And it's just kind of interesting. I think once you finally like just meet another person, well, what Les Mis there, another French thing, to see another person is to see the face of God or something. Is that what it is? But I think that's just so... I think for us who have experienced people within the community of individuals with developmental disabilities, we know how much just joy and love has been brought from that, mm-hmm. that we see it as such a value within our society. And I think that's what the church and what Jerome saw. There was so much value within that community. Mm-hmm. And I think you bringing up this example, I think is hitting on us and our little heartstrings because that's a community that we see, again, so much value that's maybe being taken advantage of mm-hmm. by this mindset of utilitarianism. by just progress for progress sake, move forward. Anyone that can't keep up, let's push behind.
Yeah. And it's, I think that's why I hope I'm not coming off as frustrated, because it is difficult to break through that, to do it for the first time, to go give and interact with a genuine poor at maybe a soup kitchen, or to experience what it is to live on the streets, like to go and to talk to someone about that, or to work with Special Olympics and to have that opportunity. Like, yes, it is like uncomfortable to begin with, but like once you have that opportunity where like you pour out, like you give of yourself, you love, you pour out, you receive so much more. And so it's like, it becomes something that you want, you desire. And so we do just get so caught up in our own bubble, in our own little world, that like, it just, and I'm sorry that I called it complaining or whining, but it is like, we're just, everything that isn't what we need or want in the moment becomes an inconvenience and a nuisance. And then we're just voicing it. The gospel is to see that if it is something, and to go and meet the person, right? And it is so frustrating that we dismiss these different groups of people and individuals as these generic things that are unnecessary to us and a burden, when in reality, like, they are people that need to be met and that Christ's love needs to be shared with. And we have to do that, as you said, by knowing it and experiencing it, right? Once it is done, it is such a beautiful gift. And that's just,
Even for people that didn't know Jerome's story, I think there's a lot of cool things within the scientific world that aren't necessarily known, especially within the Catholic world. A lot of the genetic even make it wasn't Gregor Mendel, who was like one of the breakthroughs of genetic science, and just how cool, like, that was so recent. How much we still don't know, and how something like that can just completely change a mindset and a worldview, and how Jerome was doing it out of a place of love and care and like support. I think that's so cool. So maybe let's like pray the cause of Venerable Jerome, and maybe get to know him more. And
absolutely.
Any shout outs?
I want to shout out to both my parents, Mark and Janet, still faithful listeners. So I appreciate you guys powering through. That's a lot of Joe and I.
That is. I apologize if we have offended you ever. I appreciate you still staying on.
And for all those English people out there, I meant to say Joey and me.
Jeez. That's you're a monster. We just came under 1,000 minutes for our year-end review for 2021. Well, I guess they don't count these ones. We'll get over 1,000.
Thank goodness.
Nice. Shout out to my brother, Jeremy, for opening up his house and helping out with the Pinewood Derby. And we've been having a lot of fun so far with Cub Scouts, so thank you, Jeremy, for helping.
Yes, true American hero. And all those people on Spotify who came and told us that we were their number one podcast, specifically Annika, who said 2 episodes, 12 minutes.
Thank you, Annika. We were, at the year interview, did it for our podcast. There were 61 people who were, we were their top podcast, because they don't listen to any other ones.
And intern Casey's top podcast listened to?
Not
Boys Lunch.
What was it?
It was that Cubs.
Boo.
Okay. Cubs podcast.
That's okay. All right. For the kingdom.
For the kingdom.